We are ready to start with our next speaker. Please welcome Stephen Dunifer. Stephen Dunifer is the founder of Free Radio Berkeley, an ongoing 15-year project to liberate the airwaves. He's currently working to develop programs in Mexico and in Latin America and in other parts of the world, including Project Tupa, Transmitters Uniting the Peoples of the Americas. You can find out more about his work at his table in the far corner of the book fair. He'll be talking today about autonomy and radio in Oaxaca. Please welcome Stephen Dunifer.
Thank you, Monica. What I'll do is give a sort of brief overview of the situation in Oaxaca, particularly as it relates to radio and the autonomous people's movement in Oaxaca. As hopefully most people are aware, there's been this pretty incredible struggle that's been taking place in Oaxaca, particularly in the last year, although, struggle is really nothing new to indigenous people, either in Oaxaca or anywhere in the Americas, at least for the last 500-odd years. But most notably, in what happened in Oaxaca was a struggle that came into being as large part catalyzed by the actions on June 14th of 2006. That is when Ulysses Reeves, the state governor of Oaxaca, decided to send several thousand police in to break up the encampments or the plantones of the teachers. This had been a traditional thing and been going on for quite a number of years. The teachers would come in, set up these encampments or plantones in the city of Oaxaca, and to basically petition for funding, better salaries, equipment, schools that didn't leak or whatever the needs were. The governor is basically, you can either determine whether he's a clueless idiot or a mendacious fuck, I'm not sure which, or some combination thereof. But this basically catalyzed all types of people through the state of Oaxaca that's coming in and busting up the plantones, and actually people were able to ultimately, during the day, to repel this police action and take back the city center. And basically, all the movements through Oaxaca basically came together, around this action by the teachers, and formed the People's Popular Assembly of Oaxaca, known as by the initials APO. And central to this struggle was a radio station that had been set up by the teachers several years in running, and operated out of one of the plantones there. And it was called Radio Plantone. And it was a fairly well-established station by June 14th of 2006. And the station was, of course, one of the immediate targets of the hired thugs and police that came in as a part of this overall bust up the plantones action. It was pretty brutal, and they had helicopters firing CS canisters and stun grenades, and it was the typical scene. But people fought back, and pretty much from June to the November, sending in the federal forces, Oaxaca was a state without a state government. Basically the governor was nowhere to be found, and basically, the autonomous movement, APO, was basically in charge of the state of Oaxaca for all intents and purposes. And that's sort of the end, all through this, this period, there were, of course, were attempts, by state forces, either in official uniform or unofficial mercenaries, to attack people, to disappear them, to haul them off wherever, and to shoot them, as in the case of a number of people, including one U.S. journalist, Brad Will, who had actually been involved in the free radio movement here in the United States. I vaguely remember him from a convention we had in Las Vegas in 1998. So they weren't apparently afraid to even shoot foreign journalists as well. But radio has always played an important role in people's struggles, whether it was the role radio played in the Bolivian tin miners' strikes in the early 50s, whether it was Roddy Rebel Day in the Cuban Revolution in the early 60s, Radio Venceremos in El Salvador in the 80s, and so forth. And what happened as a result of the destruction of Radio Plantone, a number of things took place of significance in regards to radio and communications media. The Radio Universidad, which is an AM station working out of the Autonomous University of Oaxaca, became the APO station at that point, at some point during this process. And of course, they became a target of attacks. Shots were fired at the studios. There were a number of, it became apparent that the station had to be protected, and barricades. Part of this whole process is that hundreds of barricades were actually set up on the streets of the city of Oaxaca, during this whole ongoing struggle after the 14th of June. And numbers of barricades were erected around the university, particularly where the radio station was located. Now, within this context, a women's march took place. I don't remember the exact date, but it wasn't too soon, too much after June 14th. Instead of marching around, they decided they would march to Channel 9. There was a state television and radio system operating out of facilities there in the city of Oaxaca, and the women basically marched to these facilities and took them over. And so for the first time in the history of the people of Oaxaca, they were able to see images of themselves, that is, the indigenous people. Oaxaca is one of the largest indigenous states populations in the country of Mexico, because they, they were never able to see images of themselves on this, it's like a public radio TV system that we, sort of the equivalent here. But basically, it only served as a propaganda mouthpiece for the governor and his cronies and his pseudo programs that were, he tried to keep pushing on the people of Oaxaca, and of course, skimming off lots of money in the process. Until the facilities, which were the transmitting facilities, which were up on a hill in the city of Oaxaca, they continued to broadcast until these facilities were attacked by armed gunmen who basically shot up the transmitters and other equipment and silenced that public radio TV system that the people were using. Within this context, there's also, within the state of Oaxaca, there's at least 30 to 40, at that point, there were like 30 to 40 unlicensed, unauthorized, mostly indigenous radio stations operating. There's been, of course, in Oaxaca and in Mexico in general, there's been a real demand for community radio or free radio stations to serve these various communities. And this is basically what we're working on, developing a program. We call it Project TUPA, Transmitters Uniting the Peoples of the Americas. I just returned from doing 2 5-day workshops in January and February in the city of Oaxaca. And it's a pretty tense situation still, with elections coming up in August, and people still feel somewhat intimidated and a little threatened. But we were able to build 24 transmitters over the course of 2 weeks and basically help 24 indigenous communities establish, get on the path of setting up their own radio stations. We're also working to develop a program principally in the indigenous schools of Oaxaca to help them set up small 10-watt radio stations at a very low cost. Radio is very, very important to people in these communities and in countries like Mexico or anywhere in Central or South America, for that matter, because we're seeing within this backdrop, struggles of indigenous people all through the Americas. And radio is playing a very important role in these struggles and could play, help even play a bigger role if we can develop, more stations, get more people involved, get more support, and so forth. In Bolivia, a community radio station in La Paz you know, served a very important role in the struggles that occurred in, you know, that occurred in Bolivia in the last 2 years. You know, radio's played a very important role, community media, in Venezuela, in the barrio communities there, because all the major media in Venezuela is still in the hands of the corporate media type people. The programs that we're developing are basically sort of multi-level. One, we do the training and workshops to get people started building their transmitters. We also try to move quickly as possible to identify people who have technical or engineering skills that we can help them develop further so they can become engineering and technical support people to help people with their stations and also become trainers themselves so they can actually teach the workshops. And thirdly, to set up actual training, teaching, and manufacturing assembly facilities within these regional areas or cities or communities so people can actually start manufacturing, assembling, and building their own transmitters and equipment to set up their own stations. So we're trying to, you know, keep in this sort of autonomous model so people keep their autonomy, that we basically are there to help facilitate their process of creating community radio stations and community media of various forms. We make no attempt to determine anything beyond that. It's up to them what they program, how they use them, and so forth. It's very important in these communities because, not just in a political sense, but in a cultural, social sense, because for many people in Chiapas or in Oaxaca, Spanish is actually a second language. Their first language is an indigenous language. It could be Mixtec, one dialect or another, Mayan, or so forth. And these stations really serve a vital role in helping people preserve their language and cultures within these communities, because they can keep reinvigorating, you know, these cultural forms of expression, the social organizations. Within the state of Oaxaca itself, you know, this idea of autonomous movements is actually fairly old, because when municipal governments were just being set up within the state of Oaxaca, the communities were essentially given the choice of two forms of governance. One was the traditional indigenous form of governance, which is called customary and usual, which is basically a collective-based form of self-governance, or they could choose a elected political party municipal form of government. About 50% went one way, 50% went the other. But now, you know, with the corruption of the political process that's been endemic there, these communities, whether small towns or even large towns, people have actually marched into City Hall and kicked out the corrupt political apparatus and have restored the traditional, customary and usual autonomous form of self-governance. You know, this is the context that APO, which is autonomous, it's a, you know, people try to define this and put it in some sort of historical lens, you know, like the socialists or, you know, communist folks try to put it within some sort of Marxist-Leninist framework, which doesn't fit at all. I don't know why they persist in trying to do that, but it's something pretty unique, not only just to Oaxaca, but it's unique. I think we can see the same type of self-governance, the same community support, community self-help, community mutual aid, and so forth. That it's a hallmark of most indigenous movements and communities throughout the Americas. But the autonomous movement, APO, is strong, it's alive. It basically has decided that it's not going to be involved in running candidates, because that would get them into this whole political party process, which they feel corrupts and is divisive. That is, you know, some people in the PRI camp, some people in the PRD camp, some people in the PAN camp. They found this was very destructive to their communities, that by this artificial divisions along party lines, it really was very destructive politically, socially, and personally to people. So there's basically been a rejection of this whole political party process and going back to this autonomous self-governance collective model based within indigenous cultures. So that's really kind of the backdrop of what's happening there. And radio, as I said, is playing a very important role in this, and I'll just kind of leave the rest of the time for some questions, if people have questions. asked which countries Project Tupa is operating in. Currently, a lot of our work's focused in Mexico. We have worked in Peru. We're looking to do some work in Argentina and probably Venezuela later in the year. Basically, wherever we can get funding and support to go to do the workshops, we will basically do that, right? Asking about the Mexican version of the Federal Communications Commission. Unfortunately, Mexico has probably one of the most retrograde policies in regards to community radio in all the Americas. Even Colombia has a better policy in regards to community radio than Mexico does. They didn't really recognize community radio, and they wanted to place a lot of restrictions. Basically, the same thing here, creating artificial barriers to entry. That is making absurd equipment requirements, absurd costs. It's ridiculous to think that some indigenous community out in the middle of this the Sierra Sur in Oaxaca, I mean, there's nothing there except them. Why do they need any sort of regulatory structure in the process? And to begin with, it's silly. Most of the indigenous communities, we don't need a license. We're autonomous. We're indigenous people. We don't need permission. And unlike the FCC here, which might send people around. It's really Mexico is still kind of a thugocracy by the governors of the state. So it's not really the Mexican FCC you have to worry about. You have to worry about hired thugs being sent by the governor or whoever to come in and bust up your station. But the interesting thing is, though, that in Oaxaca, there were some stations that were licensed community stations, and for whatever reason, they were the ones that were attacked the most, by the forces, apparently because the autonomous community stations are better protected by the communities, and they weren't as subject to attack. But it was kind of amusing that the unlicensed stations weren't attacked as much as the licensed ones were. So.
I have a similar question, okay. But just to follow up. So there's no real government enforcement. It's all just kind of attacking.
It depends. It's mostly if you piss off the governor, type thing with your radio station. They might send some federal people in at some point, but a lot of these communities, it's really done, the governors have a lot of political sway, within the states as to what goes on and what doesn't go on.
So there's no way to obtain a license? If they did want one, you say they don't because they're going against, they're saying they're not under the authority of the government. But let's say they wanted to try and get a license. There's none available?
Well, the process isn't really defined. There's some people from AMARC, which is the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. They're working to try to get some process established. But so far, their track record isn't very good. One person, this woman, I can't remember her name, she's actually vice president or whatever, AMARC now, internationally. They tried to get a community process set up, but there were 15 community radio stations. But the deal they ended up brokering was that half of them had to go off the air so the other half could get licensed. And it wasn't,
That was in Mexico.
Yeah, that was in Mexico. And the thing is, they put such a high, they say that we got to have this equipment, this equipment, this equipment, this equipment, and by the time it adds up, it's so expensive, no one can afford it. Right, the question is about kits and startup units. Yes, we have kits and stuff available. We have radio camps where you can build, we teach you how to build your own transmitter. All right, well, thank everyone for coming, and I want to thank the
Thank you so much to Stephen Dunifer. Woo.